Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and we have Tom and Melissa Gould, as we have every show for the past 120 years. And our relative newcomer, Marta Kristen. Hello, Marta.
Hello.
Good to meet you. Hello, Tom and Melissa.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Marta.
Hello, Tom and Melissa. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Well, that ends our show. We got the hello.
Done. That was fun.
We're done. Yeah. Before we get started, I want to mention that two of our grief retreats are presently open for reservations. The one in January is our general grief retreat, open to people who suffered all types of losses. And also open is our April retreat. They're both in Florida. Good weather for both of them. And the one in April was for parents who have lost, you know, children. So all the information's on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and you can check that out. So, you know what I wanted to mention at the top of the show, and I specifically wanted to hear Tom's opinion on this, but I did a post the other day, you probably read it, about going in for an MRI. No, this isn't the other story, but you know.
You're not telling that story, are you?
Well, no. Well, I will if you ask me to, but you know, and the MRI was, you know, I've had it before and I annually, but you know, it could have. If I got the wrong diagnosis, it would be very, very, you know, grave. So I'm in the MRI machine, and you know what it's like, and you know, the whirring and the noises and the clanging. So, you know, I started to focus on something, and what do I focus on? I focus on the worst, because that's what I do. You know, what would I do if you know, the diagnosis came out bad, but as I was going through it, I was surprisingly calm, you know, I was really calm about it, you know, because I you know, when I reasoned it out, it's probably because of beliefs that we're more than our physical bodies. And if my time was up, so be it. And the reason I mentioned you, Tom, is I remember having this discussion with you on the air, because you went in for a very serious surgery, and it was not a given that you were going to make it through the surgery. And you described the same thing, you know, being at peace and you know, what was going to be was going to be. So I guess my question to you is that due to your beliefs about what happens after we die? Why do you think absolutely. You were so calm? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I felt, you know, I've since being part of the foundation and dealing with mediums and spirituality, I have my routines of when I go in for surgery, I tend to imagine the white light surrounding me as a healing and protective. But yeah, I don't have any fear for my own death. Of course, I would be my only fear is leaving my family behind. But as far as passing over, I'm ready for it when it happens.
Yeah. And Marta and I were having that discussion. I think what we do is both of us were in agreement that we don't fear our death, but we fear the suffering that could come with the dying process, right? So, I mean, that I think that's common to a lot of people, you know, but Of course, you, Marta, have a new method of surrounding yourself with light because you have an, I know you have a new addition in the house of a Buddha statue.
Yes, it's like 500 pounds. We tried to lift it. It's marble.
Wow.
Yeah, but I treated myself to it after I did a show a couple of weeks ago. And so I thought, well, I'm going to, I was looking at it for like 2 months and I finally got it from a thrift store.
Wow.
Yeah, I cleaned it up and it's beautiful. It's very gentle and calm.
Yeah. Wow. Is it really that large?
It's not large. It's just,
it's just really, really
marble.
Heavy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I happened to be there and, you know, Marta said, well, you know, we just got to get it out of the car, you know. Weighs about 200 pounds, you know. It's like,
I didn't realize it.
A wonderful addition to your new home.
Yes, yeah. It is. It's blessed. I'm blessed.
You know, one other thing I wanted to mention, and we'll take a caller, but I was last night on Jimmy Kimmel. Carol Burnett was on, and I didn't watch the show, but I watched a clip of her appearance. And what they were talking about was Carol Burnett does Wordle, which, you know, I was interested in because I do Wordle like usually at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I do it every day. I've been doing it for years, and Carol Burnett has a group of celebrity friends. You know, Charlize Theron and a bunch of others, and they all compete against each other to see who gets it. And they were all, so Jimmy Kimmel starts off by saying, well, you know, there's a rumor going around that you cheat, you know, Carol, you know, because, you know, you get Wordles in two usually, you know, and sometimes even one. And they even went around to the different celebrities and asked if they thought that Carol was cheating. And they all said, oh, yes, you know, she has to be. But she wasn't, but, you know, she said that she got the on one try 7 times,
wow,
which is really statistically impossible because you don't using any skill. It's just purely intuition. So Kimmel said, well, how do you do that? Do you have satanic powers? You know, and her answer was, well, I wouldn't say satanic, you know, but I'm somewhat psychic, you know, but I just mention it because it shows the perception, even somebody, you know, like Jimmy Kimmel, that things that are out of the ordinary, like psychic stuff, is something sinister or something to be feared. And that's what we've been fighting against, you know, for the last 20 some odd years, right? It's just another thing. So I thought that was interesting. But
it's funny you should mention that, Bob, because I just rushed in the door a few minutes ago because I joined some of my gal pals for an early dinner, and I told them I had to leave, of course, to get back home for the radio show. And one of them's like, "Now, but first, tell us at your retreats that you go to, what happens there?" And it was as if mystical things are unfolding when we go to these retreats. And I gently said, it's not like that, but she really thought, you know, mystical, weird, woo-woo, as Fran used to like to say.
Yeah.
And of course it's not that. And if anybody's curious right now, I mean, it is people who are in grief and having mediums there to connect them to their loved ones in the afterlife brings so much comfort. So there's nothing woo-woo about our retreats.
No. Nothing woo-woo, but there are many mind-blowing occurrences.
There are those,
yes. Well, you know what, Marta, what about in the acting world and entertainment industry? Do you find people are more open to such things than, let's say, the general population, or is it the same?
That's a good question, because I think we have to be very much in touch with our intuitive selves, and we are people readers. We find qualities in others that we have to play. So we find it within ourselves, and we're observers. We're translators. And I do think that because we are more in tune to our everyday lives, I mean, our everyday emotions, that we tend to be more intuitive and more empathic, I think.
And also we know that most psychics and intuitive people, are use the right side of their brain a lot and tend to be artistic and musicians and things like that. So that's why I asked the question, because I would think that even though people might not readily discuss it in the entertainment industry, that they're more open to it, at least. There's a question that came in. I 100% believe in reincarnation and have experienced a past life through a regression. I wonder if pets are part of our soul family as well.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would think so.
Yeah, and right evidence of that is some of the near-death experience accounts that I have been told or read about will mention. In fact, there's one guy who talked to me personally at one of our events and said that he was on the porch and blacked out and actually had an NDE. And the first thing that he saw in his NDE was his childhood dog come running up to him. And then when he was revived, he was really annoyed that he was brought back to this plane. So, yes, I definitely think all living things have souls.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're shaking your head, Maura.
Absolutely. All living things have souls, and even plants. I know that sounds extreme, but I find that if I talk to my plants, they do. But my dogs, I've had many dogs, and most of them have lived very long lives, and I think for various reasons that. They've lived so long is because of the connection that we've had. I mean, I hug them, I kiss them, I hold them. I have an old dog now, and when I hold her, she feels my heartbeat and I feel hers, and she just sits on my shoulder, and I can feel the deep love and care, and she licks my face and she knows that I'm there for her and I'll see her through to the end. Oh, she's coughing now. She's old. She has a heart condition and a narrow trachea I keep thinking it's the end, but nope, she comes back and I always, I'm always so very happy, of course.
Yeah. Well, you're just talking about the, your dream visits, where pets come through. But you also, you had asked a question about somebody coming through in a dream, and you having a conversation, and then the person just turns into light.
Mm.
I know you had that experience, with Kevin.
Yes.
And you were wondering if that sounds, normal, what's that about, and I said that it makes sense because they're in the light, they're coming to you in material form. I don't know how long that can be sustained. And then they return to the light. So I don't know why more people don't see that. I never experienced that in a dream visitation. Have you, Tom and Melissa, where somebody has come through to you and then just turned into light?
I can't say for myself that specifically. I recall the dream visit I had, I believe, it was from my father, it is a dream visit because I recall it so clearly, but it wasn't that he was coming to me. I saw him surrounded by people as he was moving through an area, and I think I've talked about it before on the radio, because my first thoughts were, oh, I better ask Bob and Fran what I should be asking my father. And he was a man who was always out to save the world. He was always fighting for the underdog and, you know, worked long days in Manhattan and then traveled home to Long Island just to go off to meetings at night to try to better the world through the different groups he belonged to. So it made sense to me that in the afterlife, you know, he'd be surrounded by people that maybe he was still trying to help. And there was a glow about that. So whether that's the kind of light. Interestingly, though, and now I've already lost a little bit of the question, but a visit, what I believe, which is very unusual, I think, and I don't know if this is something any of our experts have discussed, but prior to my mother's passing, and I've got to check my computer files because I wrote about it, I had a dream of my mother being near the end of her life, it seemed, and that Tom and I had taken her to sort of a preliminary seminar about what to expect. She already knew our interest. She raised me to believe in all of this, but closer to the end, it was a little hard for her to grasp, you know, what's really happening, what's happening next. And in this dream, I was with Tom. We were watching my mom sitting in front of a big screen with a lot of other older people. And it was kind of like the whole, like the meaning of life, here it all is. And my mother is paying very close attention to what's happening on the screen. And this is, I'm going off tangent, but it's so strong right now. And I recall sitting there next to Tom, and I can still see right where we were sitting in this room and where my mother was sitting. And I'm sort of dozing off because, like, it's like, okay, how long is this going to go on? And I glance up at a clock on the wall, and it's approaching 10:30 a.m. And I'm like, okay, this should be wrapping up. But I'm noticing that my mom is out of her seat now and walking with people up this elevated platform. And I can only describe it as being maybe in a conference center in a hotel. And I'm noticing that she needs no assistance walking. And she's walking up to the on the left side with all these other people, and like, oh my gosh, I've got to go catch up with her. You know, I don't know in my head if I thought to say goodbye. I think to help her. Like, oh my gosh, she's walking without assistance. I better go help her. I scoot off to the right side of this room and find another passageway up, and I just recall levels, stairs, and plants like you might see on a landing in a hotel. And as I'm going up and up, it's getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And I never meet up with my mom. And this was while my mom was still alive and many years ago. And as I said, I should check my files where I documented it. But thinking back more recently, like really recently, the time on the clock in my dream was the time she actually did die.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You were having that dream of her going up the staircase towards the light.
Yeah.
But she was still alive. You know,
I don't know. But well, these are the things that this is cool that we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, what if we didn't like all the specifics? Let's think of the best.
Yeah. You're listening to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. In case you had a question and you wanted to call in, the number is 888-627-6008. We had a question saying, I've noticed that some mediums begin their readings with a prayer. Is a prayer necessary for them to connect to spirit? You know, each medium has their own way of connecting to spirit. Some feel that a saying a prayer would help. I mean, Tom mentioned surrounding himself, you know, with white light, you know, which is you know, another thing that he uses, not necessarily to, you know, to connect with spirit, but as a form of protection. Most mediums don't say a prayer before, or some may say it, you know, to themselves. When we first started doing this, you know, 20 some odd years ago, when I used to see a medium engage in prayer, I would reason out, well, you know, it's probably because they have to hedge their bets. You know, they're doing something that's frowned upon, you know, so by their religion, so they'll do a little prayer just in case. But I don't, certainly I don't think that, you know, prayer is the same thing as thought, you know, so sending their thoughts out. So I don't think it's prayer per se. What do you guys think?
I think it's more meditation than prayer, although prayer can be a form of meditation as well. But I think the key word is meditation. I was just listening to an interview with Jeff Tarrant, who's does a lot of research with mapping the brain waves when things are going on, and he had mapped the brain of Laura Lynn Jackson when she was doing mediumistic work. There was a portion of the brain that basically shut down, and that was the portion of the brain that was analytical and would be thinking about, oh, I've got a meeting next week, and oh, I've got to go to the cleaners, and all of that sort of thing. And when she gets into a state where she's doing medium work, that part of the brain basically is quieted. And that's where I bring in meditation, because meditation is all about quieting your conscious brain so that the unconscious universe and energy can flow through it. So that's more the key than prayer.
I think too, what we've observed with some of the mediums over the years is they have developed, or as they developed their skills, they had certain rituals that they would go through. I could compare it similarly to hearing that some of the mediums started their practice of reading people using tarot cards or, you know, some other instrument, which it turned out they really didn't need, but it was how they developed their skills. So it could have been a habit to always go into prayer before doing a reading to sort of calm themselves, but maybe it's nothing they really need to do, but it's more of a habit.
I
know in acting, before I go on stage, I meditate. I calm myself. It could just be something like that. I do Tai Chi, and so that I can just concentrate on my breath. So I, you know, it's just maybe a, you know, a form, a tradition for them. And you know, prayer on the whole is not a bad thing. You're reaching out to something out here.
You know, on that subject of preparing, we recently had a medium that said on her application that she can only read with the use of a Ouija board. She called it a spirit board, you know, but it, which is, you know, and I said, well, it doesn't work for us, you know, because I'm not, you could do that, but, you know, not for our purposes, you know. I mean, they should be able to connect, you know, without those, but it goes along with the same, you know, tarot cards and that kind of stuff. And maybe it helps in private readings, but I don't think it's somebody that could work with us.
I thought you were going to say, Bob, that they could only do it like fully unclothed, you know.
Oh, well, then we might have accepted her, but I
Would be interesting.
Well, you know, we talk about medium demonstrations. It's a different another interesting one. You know, politicians often end their speeches with "God bless America." You know, they've done that for as long. You know, all presidents have done that, and a lot of other politicians. You know, so you know, the question is, what about people in other countries? You know, the inference with that is that, you know, God plays favorites, you know. So the question was, are there any favorites in the afterlife? I don't think so. I think everybody's pretty much on an equal footing, you know. And then if there's a, you know, God or spirit or universal love, that's what it's all about. Everybody's equal. There's no reason to favor one or the other. But I always did find that curious, didn't you? I mean, it's not only the U.S., but I'm sure other countries have similar things. You know, God bless us. You know, it should be God bless everyone. You know,
true, yes,
true.
Yeah.
Well, Bob Dylan years ago wrote a song with God on our side. It was ironic, of course, but because we, you know, he of all people, you know, really touched the essence of who we are in his poetry, and at least for me he did. And so I think that it eliminates so many other approaches. When the Dalai Lama said you can't ride two horses, but that doesn't mean the other horse doesn't exist. And so you know, it's all right to ride one horse, and if it gives us direction and it gives us purpose and it makes us better people, but then to negate anything else is to me, you're missing out on so much of our world and the experiences and people in it.
And you know, talking about politicians and bringing up God, you know, the One Nation Under God in the Pledge of Allegiance is relatively new. It was only in the 40s or the 50s that they added that. So it's not been since our inception that we have been all about "In God We Trust" and "God Bless" and that.
Yeah. The only thing that's strange to me is the concept of nations and boundaries, you know, that doesn't go with a universal.
Well, true.
Course, you know, there are no boundaries, you know, I mean, so, and you know, one nation under God or this under God or this country, the only thing that separates one country from the other is an imaginary line, you know, it never made much sense to me. Here was a question. Do mediums get dream visitations from those in spirit realms, I guess, like the rest of us do?
And I would say yes.
Absolutely, they do. Yeah, I mean,
just like the rest of us.
And, yeah.
And they say we could develop our own mediumistic skills ourselves, you know, if we really put our minds to it and can quiet our minds. And so why not?
Yeah, and a lot of mediums I've seen it, you know, where they say that the person who they're bringing through in the reading, they dreamt about the night before, you know, because they somehow the person in spirit or either arranged it or knew that this was going to happen. So yeah, I think that they definitely do.
You know, Bob, you're reminding me many years ago, I recall going to a development workshop. I went with Fran and some other people from Long Island. We drove to New Jersey and met with one of our mediums who worked, you know, we were curious. Those of us who went didn't feel like we had any special abilities, but we were definitely curious in finding out how one would develop their abilities. And what surprised me as we were guided by this, it was one of our certified mediums, how subtle it really is. And I think, I still kind of think, but I know better, that it would be like a big aha, like whoa moment if we were suddenly connecting with someone on the other side, someone who's deceased. And yet it's not. It's incredibly subtle. And through the guidance of this certified skilled medium, seasoned medium, many of us in the group were making connections, but it was incredibly subtle. And so I think that's kind of when people have been told by our mediums, you can do this too. And we go, oh, no, we couldn't. Because we're expecting some wow, great big revelation or aha moment. And it's I don't believe it's like that.
Yeah. As are many of the, you know, signs and after-death communications that we get, that, you know, they're very subtle and it's easy not to recognize. You made me think when you're talking about the workshop, and this was a good life lesson for me, but I went to one of those, you know, workshops at a time where I really didn't believe in mediums. I was open about it, but I didn't really believe in it. And the moderator broke us in the group into paired us up with other people, and we were supposed to give a reading to the other person. And I gave a totally fraudulent cold reading, you know, because I couldn't, I wanted to say something, you know, but I sized up, you know, the woman's approximate age and her ethnicity. And I was saying, well, general things. And she was, oh, my God, you know, whatever. And she thought I gave a terrific, you know, reading. But it opened my eyes to how sometimes it's very difficult for the sitter to discern whether you're giving them a cold reading or an actual reading. Of course, you can make the argument that I really wasn't giving a cold reading, that, you know, that I was reading her. But the point was, like, she was crying, you know, whatever, because of some of the stuff that I said. So I'm open to both, you know, explanations, you know. Yeah. That would be pretty interesting. I thought I'm giving her a cold reading and I'm getting information. There's another one on mediums. I've heard it said that mediums cannot summon someone in spirit to appear. Is that true?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. I get that too. Melissa talking about our friends asking questions and that was one of the ones that I get recently about, well, mediums, if they can do all these wonderful things, how come they can't do other things? And I said, well, slow down. The medium is not doing anything, and the very word medium is that they're an intermediary. They are in between. They are the conduit through which the spirit can communicate with their loved ones. They're basically a human phone booth where spirit sees the medium, knows that they can get a message to the medium, and then pass it along to their loved one. And yeah, that's how it works. It's the spirit that comes through and not the other way around, not summoning them.
Or even like a translator. Two people speaking different languages.
Yeah. And I think that certainly, you know, when you say summon, that means like ordering, you know, ordering somebody to appear. But and we used to say that a lot, you know, to people that mediums can't summon. And then one of our mediums years ago, might have been Joe Scheel, I don't remember, said to me that's wrong, that we can not summon, but, you know, request somebody to come in, like you could go to a sitter and, you know, through thought, invite that sitter's dad to come through, and often they will. So summon is not a, you know, I guess if the medium sends out a thought signal and the sitter sends out a thought signal, like we're always telling people, set your intention. I mean, it's not summoning. It's more of a requesting.
Request.
Yeah. And sometimes that works.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I think that word summon is a little strong, but
yeah.
Request is kind of.
Send out an invitation. Like we all, when we talk about dream visits, and we used to do that in our retreats on a Friday night to say, you know, let's do what we can to encourage a dream visit. And we would talk about inviting them, please come to me. It never turned out to be all that successful. I've only had a couple of dream visitations in my life. So it's not something you can really do on a daily basis, or as we were just talking, you can't make it happen, but you can, as Bob said, send out the intention. This is what I would like to happen. If you, you know, if you're around, please come, kind of thing. But yeah, it's not a given. It's not 100% foolproof.
I like this question. If science ever discovers a way to extend life indefinitely, which is not beyond the realm of feasibility, does that mean, meaning that we never die, does that mean that the next realm becomes a closed community? You know, you know, it's like there's nobody else coming in because everybody else is dying. You know, it's like a gated community. You know, it's like, I guess that's what it means. You know, there's no new customers, at least not from Earth.
Yeah, I always had it in my head to, if I were to write a sci-fi novel, that would be my subject would be somebody who gets, you know, your knee goes bad, you put in a plastic knee, you know, and this goes bad and you put up a plastic that, and this particular protagonist in the story has lived long enough that every body part has been replaced with something that won't stop. And the only thing left to that person is their soul, but they're trapped in this mechanical manifestation. And the, you know, the conflict in the story would be that he wants to go. He wants to go to the next realm, but he's trapped in inside of this.
I like that. I like that.
Well, in a way, we are trapped, you know, in our bodies, and but to have that constant thought that we're going to be here. I mean, I can imagine the crowding in the Earth, and we have to travel off to some other, you know, other planets, you know, if that were the case. But I'm not sure if most people would say they want to live forever. I don't think I'm. You know, I don't know whether I would. It's an interesting question, an interesting thought.
It depends on what the world is like. You know, right now it's not so terrific in many ways. And I don't know. I could almost, you know, if you could relive certain events, but not random every day to day, I don't think so.
Yeah. And, you know, housing would be really expensive. and there'd be, you know, yeah, exactly. It depends what life would be like. Is it going to be, you know, murders and, you know, when everybody killing each other and fighting for a little piece of turf? And
The question, can man get along?
Yeah.
So sure about that. I have a question about touch, because I occasionally feel something on my arm or something touching my face. And you know, and I just sort of, you know, wipe it away, but then I realize it's been a touch. I don't know what that is. Maybe you can give me some answers about that.
Spiders.
Do you feel like it's
spiders?
What did you say, Bob? You make fun of this. I'm being gentle. No. What did you say?
No, I said spiders, but but you know, touch is one of the common forms of after death communication. You know that you know the discarnates can sometimes it's a brush of the hair, sometimes it's a tap on the shoulder, and you look and there's nobody there, and there's no physical cause that to happen. So I believe that our loved ones can, you know, touch us or make their presence known that way. And maybe a touch is easier than, you know, appearing to us. So I would tend to think that it was a sign or a communication as opposed to, if no obvious thing is causing it. Yeah.
It doesn't seem to happen in any great time of need. It just seems to all of a sudden, I feel the touch or on my hand, or it's not my dog. She just licks my ankles, but yeah. but yeah, okay. I just wanted to ask that question because it happens pretty frequently, and I think, well, maybe it's just some nerve that is activated in my body, but it's not that. It's gentle. It's almost like a breeze, but a gentle breeze just touching my hands or my face. Or
yeah.
Well, you mentioned it maybe not happening in a time of need, but perhaps it's happening when in a time of calmness.
Yes.
When you're not necessarily thinking or worrying or anything about that, and you're just at ease, and then you're more susceptible to experiencing the subtle signs that you get.
Oh, interesting. Okay, good.
I thought along your lines too, because I know after my daughter died, I, for quite some time, I'd say probably for 6 months or a year, I would constantly feel a brush on the right side of my head, and I like you, I said, well, maybe it's tension, maybe it's some sort of a nerve thing, but it would happen so frequently that I tended to think that it was her, I believe it probably was. So.
And I recall feeling just something like on the back of my head, and I kind of thought maybe it was my father years ago, just kind of nudging me or, being silly, I should take it as a lovely, loving caress, but more like teasing me.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
A question. Do you think it's important for a medium to have a basic understanding about grief? Yeah, I think we do. It's important because they're dealing constantly all the time with people in grief. And there's a certain way that you need to be able to deliver a message and communicate. You have to exhibit some understanding and compassion and empathy for the person. The people could feel it if you're very cold and stand, and kind of know what the person on the other side is feeling. We've witnessed that, and now we've noticed even in our own medium community that a lot of our mediums are taking courses, right, and getting trained, in grief. I think that's a good thing. The dangerous thing is when they start to act in the capacity of a therapist, which they're not, unless they also become licensed, therapists. There has to be a line between the two. Because you could do a lot of damage, if you're not trained, in therapy. A lot of the therapists that are progressive thinking, they're calling all the time to ask for recommendations for mediums for their clients because they want to integrate that into their therapy practice. So, I definitely believe that mediums should have at least a basic understanding about grief.
I never like to think negatively, but I do know, and we've heard stories about people perhaps becoming a little too reliant or I don't want to say addicted to, but the help they're getting, we've heard it with mediums. I think of a friend of ours who had reached out. I think she was seeing a counselor who was also had mediumistic abilities, and that person either moved away or quit her practice, and that's what she was looking for again. And, money's involved. You're paying somebody, and you want to be sure it's going in the right direction, that you're not becoming too heavily reliant on messages they might be maybe even repeating. And I shouldn't be negative about it, because I definitely, if something's helping somebody in a healthy way, it's of course, a good thing. Yeah. But I don't know if it's often easy to tell the difference when somebody's in grief. You might not always have a clear thinking.
Yeah. And the whole profession, the mediumship profession is it's really serious work, you know, because you're dealing with people that are in grief, you know, if somebody goes to a medium and they're on the fence about whether or not their loved one survives, and then they get a terrible reading, or even worse, a fraudulent one, then they walk away feeling much worse than when they entered. So, you know, mediums, I give them a lot of respect because they are in a position, but it also comes with a tremendous amount of responsibility. So, you know, I don't know how mediums even handle it, you know, but, you know, so, I mean, some don't care, you know, unfortunately, but I don't know how you could be empathic and compassionate and loving and not be affected by a reading that doesn't happen. You know, it's, you know, sort of like a doctor losing a patient, you know? So.
Yeah, it's true.
This person wants to know, do mediums know how they're able to communicate with the dead? I don't think so, because we don't know, you know, even science doesn't know exactly how, because we haven't nailed down what consciousness is. So the mediums all have their theories, you know, when you hear things like, well, like, you know, I raise my frequency and the person's spirit lowers theirs, which maybe a simplified way of saying it, but they don't. A lot of mediums are really troubled by that, you know, and they ask, you know, the scientists, you know. That's why a lot of mediums are interested in the work that, like, you know, like Jeff Tarrant does and others, you know, and measuring and observing brain waves, because they want to figure it out. You know, imagine having an ability and not knowing, it's frustrating, and not knowing how you have that ability, right?
It's interesting hearing some of the mediums talking about their earliest recognition of their abilities, that they thought what they were doing, everyone was doing. And that made, you know, for a child, how would a child not know? You have abilities and you just kind of assume, okay, you know, this is how people work. This is what goes on. Switching from what I just said to thinking about how the skill it takes. I'm just saying the skills people have in general are the way we process things. I know Tom and I have a different skill set. He's quick to figure things out that are, you know, I don't know, intelligence wise, but he admits that some things that I visualize and I can, you know, see it quite clearly, he can't see it at all. And I sort of, you know, I would naturally think everyone has that ability, but, you know, he'll say, no, I didn't have that. But similarly, the stuff he can process very quickly and make sense of, and I can't. So I wonder if it would fall into, you know, those kind of abilities, which are quite different, and yet maybe not.
Yeah. And that's why mediums all get their information differently. They communicate it differently. So I guess the answer to that question is, nope, I don't think none of the mediums know how they do it. They just know they can do it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. You know, this question comes up a lot, you know, with religion. You know, I was raised as a Christian, and I was taught to be always feared going to hell. And so I've seen this manifest fear among the dying as they question if they'll be doomed. You know, I believe this is harmful. What are your thoughts? I guess that's the part, you know, as a non-Christian, that I always, you know, question, you know, that I think that the fear that is preached about, if you do this, you're going to go here, and you do this, you're going to go there, sets people up for disappointment. You know, I mean, because look at how many people they lose somebody and then they're really, really angry with God. You know, I was told if I did this and I did that, God was going to take care of me. You know, and then the other point is, they're dying, they're on their deathbed, and they're racked with fear about questioning, well, where am I going? Am I going to be doomed to an existence? So I don't know. I guess all religions have similar things, but that the fear is something that you don't want when you're transitioning,
No,
right?
not at all.
No,
I have to say that my mind is racing with this because the one of the things that that probably the most often written phrase in the Bible, in the Old and New Testament, is "Be not afraid," and I tell everyone that fear only stops you from going forward, and that to believe. I mean, I was raised a Christian, and but to be to fear the that you're not going to that you're going to go through some kind of hell and fire and fury is just the antithesis of what I think faith teaches us. And that my father, who was a philosophy professor and a great Kierkegaard student of Kierkegaard, wrote a poem about that, and it was The Last Question. And it was about, am I going to lose my faith at the last second? And that was his, that was the fear that he dealt with, that he just was terrified, not terrified, but it was a question that he played with, he could, because he was very sure about not being afraid after he died. But and to be completely what we're talking about, calm and at ease, and allowing himself to just transition. But I always loved the idea that he presented to himself. It was a challenge for him. Am I going to continue that last second with my faith? With feeling that it's all going to be okay. And I think we all sort of we have that fear, and it's just a natural fear, because we're going into an unknown. And I used to read to my mother about the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying while she was dying, and that of course states that you die as you live. And and she liked that very much, of course, that because she had always lived a very honorable and ethical and loving life.
Well, I prefer the spiritual explanation, that doesn't have fear, that we go where we belong. It's all about self-judgment, not somebody telling us where to go, and that even the most evil among us eventually move towards the light. It takes some longer than others, but nobody's doomed to a hellish existence.
If you've an evil lifestyle, you will have a lot more work to do on the other side, but there is no punishment on the other side.
Right. And I think that is a wrap. We're almost out of time. We'd like to read our global peace prayer in honor of Claude Swanson, and that is, let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
Oh, and I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Have a wonderful weekend and a peaceful holiday if we don't talk to you before.
Oh, good to see you all. Have a good night.
Yeah.
Good night. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.